Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, Karma Yoga, Action, Krishna Consciousness, text number 20. Naparishat priyam prapya. No dvijat prapya cha priyam. Stira buddhira samudo. Brahmavid brahmani sthitaha. Na. Never. Prarishet. Rejoices. Priyam. The pleasant. Prapya. Achieving. Na. Does not. Udvijet. Become agitated. Prapya. Obtaining. Cha. Also. Apriyam. The unpleasant, stira buddhi, self-intelligent, asamuda, unbewildered, brahmavit, one who knows the supreme perfectly, brahmani, in the transcendence, situated, sthitaha, situated. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Person who neither rejoices upon obtaining something pleasant nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. Purport. The symptoms of the self-realized person are given herein. The first symptom is that he is not illusioned by the false identification of the body with his self. He knows perfectly well that he is not this body, but is the fragmental portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is therefore not joyful in achieving something, nor does he lament upon in losing anything which is related to his body. The steadiness of mind is called sthira buddhi, or self-intelligent. He is therefore never bewildered by mistaking the gross body for the soul, nor does he accept the body as permanent and disregard the existence of the soul. This knowledge elevates him to the station of knowing the complete science of the Absolute Truth, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. He thus knows his constitutional position perfectly well without falsely trying to become one with the Supreme in all respects. This is called Brahman realization, or self-realization. Such steadiness, steady consciousness, is called Krishna consciousness. Naparishat priyam prapya no dvijat chapriyam stira buddhira samudo brahmavid brahmani sthitaha. Person who neither rejoices upon obtaining something pleasant, nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. The definition of a person who is in transcendence has been given in many different ways in the Bhagavad Gita. Now, in our general understanding, after Brahman realization, after we are fixed in the knowledge that we're eternal, then one gradually can develop without interference one's Krishna consciousness. Because according to Sri Rupa Goswami, there are five powerful processes of devotional service, namely chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, worshipping the deities, living in a holy place, and serving the devotees. That these five powerful processes, if executed with determination, with concentration, can actually help us experience bhava, or transcendental ecstasy, even when we're neophytes. Now the question is that how to come to the platform, or what is the platform where we're actually steadily engaged in Krishna service. That's called nishta, when there is no interference. Just like if you put the iron in the fire, it gets hot, undoubtedly. And if you keep it in the fire, then it gets hotter and hotter and hotter till it becomes like fire. But if you put it into the fire and it becomes somewhat hot, and then you take it out of the fire and put it in ice water, then it doesn't get so hot. And then you put it back in the fire and take it out. So that's called anishtita bhajana kriya. We're coming together, we're chanting, we're doing service. And when we're doing that, when we're engaged in Krishna service and in Krishna consciousness, then we're like the iron in the fire. Krishna, his name, we're listening to it. We might remember we were seeing his forms. So many forms are here, just like here. We may think, well, these are nice pictures of Krishna, but actually they're looking at us and thinking, well, they look like nice devotees. I hope they wake up soon. We're thinking that, you know, we're out of mercy, we're worshiping these statues, whatever. And Krishna's thinking, wow, it's been a long time, but I'm sure they're eventually going to make it. Just got to stand here a little longer. So we have one perspective on things, and Krishna has a different perspective. Reality is one thing, and our present state of consciousness is a different thing. But we can come to that stage if we remain steadily engaged in Krishna's service as much as possible. And especially if we don't engage ourselves in the lower modes of nature, namely ignorance and passion. Because the lower modes of nature are just like ice water, especially ignorance. Passion is kind of like putting some cold water on, but not ice water. And goodness is kind of like neutral. You're not either making the consciousness more dull, nor you make it more excited. It's just kind of neutral. So it's prepared in that state to accept devotional service when we're practicing it. So at least if we're acting in the mode of goodness, it's better than acting in passion and ignorance. The problem is our minds are accustomed to ignorance and passion, not just activity. It's the state of our consciousness, of our mind. Therefore, some cultivation of knowledge has to be there so we can identify what parts of how we're attached to conceptions or ideas or feelings. Ideas are one thing, but actually feelings are much more intense. We feel something, I hate this devotee, I hate them. And then we try to counteract it with a little bit. Well, no, you shouldn't do that. Well, anyhow, it's the way I feel. Take it or leave it. It's my feeling, I have my choice. So many times we think our feelings are much more important than our intelligence. Yes, I know I shouldn't feel like that, but no one's going to force me to love this person because he's rotten and useless and fallen. So I have a good right to hate him. I should have the right to hate people, don't I? So our minds will give us every excuse in the book. Matter of fact, she's very expert since she's conditioning unlimited souls since time immemorial, and she knows us, our whole history, past, present, that she's quite expert. She knows exactly what to talk to us and how to say it. Oh, you poor soul. I know he's been torturing you. He deserves something worse, but, you know, don't worry, I'll arrange it eventually. I'll get him. That's Maya speaking. So Maya will always try to talk us out of becoming a Krishna conscious, out of seeing things from the point of view of eternity, all in relation to our body. Oh, they offended my body. And worse than that, they even attacked my false ego. No, I don't believe it. How can anyone attack your false ego? It's such a nice false ego. You're such a nice person, anyhow. So everyone believes that their activities, their conceptions, their very feelings are actually quite nice and worthy of respect. And anyone who doesn't respect them, obviously there's something wrong with them, and that should be corrected. We hardly ever think, well, maybe there's something wrong with me, and maybe I should be corrected. Or as Vaishyasika Prabhu said in one class, I live to be corrected. How many of us think like that? That I'm living to be corrected. No, generally speaking, we think, I live to correct others. But this equanimity of mind can't be obtained by trying to correct everyone else. We can't work on everyone else's mind and at the same time neglect our own. If we look inside, we'll find out, if we examine our feelings, we have a few things to work on. It's not every time we see a devotee, immediately our seeker, our hair stands on end, and we just want to fall at their feet and embrace them and offer them my whole life as service. Probably not our normal state of consciousness. But for a pure devotee, situated in transcendence, who can actually see things, that is a state of consciousness. I remember one time I was on book distribution. I was the temple president in a temple called Dallas. This is around 1972 or something, maybe 72, maybe a little earlier than that. And then the previous temple president came back and they made me the treasurer. But my temple president loved to spend money on phone calls. And phone calls at that time were quite expensive. Unfortunately, he didn't have any means of collecting anything, so our collection was book distribution. And I was a Sankirtan leader also. And the treasurer. In any case, so we were doing all right. We had some brahmacharis, but then the brahmacharis fell in love. And we lost all the brahmacharis, except for myself. So I was the only collector. And at that time, Dallas, Texas, was deep south, southern America, was not noted for being very liberal and receptive for unusual personalities. Or in Texas, they have Vidor, Texas, which Vidor, Texas is the headquarters for the Ku Klux Klan. I used to go and distribute books there, actually. Not dressed as in devotional clothes, though. In pants and shirt. And they were quite simple people, actually. They generally took our books, because I didn't tell them a whole lot about the philosophy. In any case, Dallas is not noticed for its open-hearted and open hands for newcomers. As a matter of fact, they were hanging black people from trees at that time. And when the first time I went on book distribution in Dallas with some other devotees, within 20 minutes they arrested us. And they put us in jail over the weekend, and they charged us for impersonating women because we went out with dhotis. Some lady had called up and said, there are men out here impersonating women. Later they let us go. Anyhow, in any case, I was not so enthusiastic all the time to go out, because at that time, there was no question of going. We didn't wear non-devotional clothes at that time. The only thing we had was dhotis. As soon as I moved into the temple, it was obligatory in the end of 68, beginning of 69, it was obligatory to hand in over all your karmi clothes. We didn't have those things. We only had devotional clothes. Even we went out in winter in Buffalo, when it got down to here, it would be like minus 30, according to how you judge things. We We go out in tongs and dhotis in the snow, chanting 8 hours a day. Except for a break, we had a break where they bring out a thermos of dal, hot dal. So all I had was dhoti, so I went out. And I wasn't very, but I had a fight with my mind because someone had to pay the bills. So when I got out there, suddenly Krishna made everyone look like they came from Vaikuntha. I was like, I didn't know what was going on. But I started to distribute magazines back to Godhead because that's all practically we had at that time. And practically everyone I stopped looked very beautiful, and they immediately took a magazine and gave a donation. So I was realizing this is some kind of, you know, arrangement from Krishna to encourage me to be out here. As soon as I distributed all the magazines, then everyone came back to what I thought was normal. I came back to my normal consciousness. So there's a difference between reality and the way we see things now. But we think there's a difference. Actually, what we're seeing is reality, and there's a difference between what's being described here in these books. It's kind of like, we think we're in reality and we think this is a fairy tale. So that has to be by the practice of devotional service and learning how to at least accept, hear, and try to understand, remember, try to understand, and try to accept. Accept means, in spite of the fact I don't really have experience, I don't really... Still, I try to, on faith, I'm going to try and put it into practice and see what happens. See what the reaction is. Try to mold my activities, try and mold my feelings, try and mold my perceptions, my conceptions, according to what the Shastra says, and then see what the result is. Then the result will be, Krishna says, that Krishna will reciprocate with us. That's how he sees that we're sincere. If we don't make an attempt to mold our desires in order to fit his instructions, then how is he going to think we're sincere? We just go on. Yes, it's nice what you say in these books, but it would be nice, but who could really believe it? And even if I believed it, you know, it's too confusing to figure out how to put it into practice. You mean I had to be nice to everyone? That's, come on. Get real. You mean I had to serve this devotee who doesn't like me? Oh, that's not possible. Not in this lifetime. Maybe next lifetime I'll come back and maybe I'll forget all the things he ever did to me or she ever did. So we have to make some adjustments and try, because the philosophy is just repeated again and again and again in different ways, so that eventually we think, all right, there must be something to it. Otherwise, how could he be so intelligent as to repeat the same thing in so many different ways? I didn't get it the first time. I didn't get it the second time he repeated it in that way. I didn't get it this way either. Okay, but now I'm starting to see that he seems to be trying to make some point here. Maybe I should start thinking about it. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Our predecessors, our parents, and also us, we all try to adjust things by external adjustment, like to make things right, to feel better, or to resolve the difficulties that we have. So how is it that so many generations, and also in our life, we had so much experience about this that it never works, but still everyone goes that way? Everyone's doing it.
No, that's why. Why? Because that's how the material nature works. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse number, let's see what verse number it is. 60, 59, 60, 64 is that. 62 and 63. Dhyayate vishayam punsam sangha sangrayate kama kama krodha pujayate. Dhyayato vishayam punsam sangha saite shujayate sangha sanjayate kama kama krodha pujayate. Krodhat bhavati samoha samohat smriti vibhramsat smriti bramsat buddhinashat buddhinasho pranasati. Because everyone is simply looking around, trying to see what will gratify my senses. Because everyone feels dissatisfied. So they're looking, what will actually make me happy? Maybe it's some food. Maybe this is the mattress that I'll need to get the perfect sleep. Maybe this is my soulmate I've been looking for since time immemorial. The goddess of fortune or two-handed Narayan. Maybe this is my enemy that I haven't killed him yet. When I kill him, everything will be all right. Only. So everyone's looking around and contemplating what's going on. And then when we become fixed on something and some idea, then lust develops. So everyone is walking around influenced by material desire, lust. And if we actually gratify our senses, the ice cream cone tastes good. My favorite flavor, strawberry. Then we look around, check our pockets, see if we have enough money to get another one. And if we do, then go for it. Get the chocolate one too. And it goes on until we run out of money or there's no more space in our stomach. We notice that some of the ice cream's coming out of our ears. And so we get frustrated. I'm a good person. How is it that I can't, you know, get what I want? And we start lamenting and we start getting agitated. And then we invent a whole story. Maya gives this whole story. How you're a good person, but there are so many bad people in the world. And therefore, this is why this has been arranged for you, because of the bad people. And you should make arrangements to get back to them. Maya gives us a whole delusional story about how we got into this situation. And then we forget actually what actually happened. The delusional story takes over reality and we're in a state of forgetfulness. And in that state of forgetfulness, we can't really figure out what went wrong and why I got into this position. And so we lose our intelligence. And then we just do the same thing over again. As I said the other day, the only thing people learn from history is that people don't learn from history. Because that's the nature of the material nature, to help us forget. So we can go on with our deluded story. And even write about it. History books, write on the internet, my blog, my current state of delusion is such, please appreciate it. This is my deluded face. Please give me some likes. Yes, we like you. You're the most deluded person we've seen today. We really sympathize. It rings a bell in our deluded life, too.
So if I understood correctly, it's this variegatedness that convinces us to try again and again.
Well, it's not, yeah. Anyhow, it's Maya. We fall into Maya. Actually, the whole thing, according to Maharaja Shabdev, is Nunam Pramata Kurute Vikarma, yet Indriya Pritiapriya. Just our desire to serve our senses. Vacha Vegam, Manas Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udra Pasta Vegam. Now, serving the senses, we can restrain. For instance, we can stop the tongue, the belly, the genitals, but it's the mind that's identified with a false ego that really gets us into trouble. So it's that desire to gratify the feelings we have that really get us into trouble. Of course, the senses push us, and sometimes we gratify them too, and they influence the mind, but really it's the root cause is the mind. And our lack of intelligence, trying to actually control the mind. Sorry, I have so much intelligence, but instead of using the intelligence to control the mind, we use the intelligence how to satisfy the mind. Anything else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I have a question about these five processes that you mentioned at the beginning of the lecture. So like chanting, hearing and reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, then deity worshiping, then another one is to serve, to live in a holy place and to serve to devotees. Sometimes we can involve in these things by our own will and desire, but some things can have to be arranged. Or can I? You tell me about more about this, like.
Well, Prabhupada has arranged the morning program. All five of them we do every day.
Yeah.
We worship the deities in the morning in the association. We chant so that others can hear and we listen while others are chanting. So that's also serving the devotees. We give them the holy name and we accept the holy name from them. We chant japa, we chant the holy name, we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and this is wherever Krishna is a holy place. So we're living in a holy place, a temple where Krishna is. So we're engaged in all five processes every day. So we pay attention, we'll get more and more benefit from it. Pay attention and try to get into the right mood, taking shelter of the mood of the previous acharyas and the devotees. Devotional attitude, service attitude.
But I'm a little bit confused. Is that my free will that I'm here or just a luck that I'm
No,
here?
You were forced. Maya forced you to come here. You had no choice. And if you try to escape, the cult leader will get you.
Hare Krishna, thank you.
Yes. Just to clarify, of course it's our free will. Otherwise, I don't see any chains around here. Anyhow, we don't have enough money to buy so many chains for everyone.
This verse. This verse says we should not rejoice too much.
Seems like we have a problem.
How much is too much?
Well, the idea is that Krishna also in Bhagavad Gita says that Raja Vidya, Raja Bhuyam, Pravitram Idam, Uttamam, Pravaksha Vargamam, Dharamyam, Susukam, Kartum, Avyam. It's a joyful process. But this is the idea of obtaining something which is pleasant, becoming overly excited. It's like, you go on Sankirtan and you get this reward they give you at Mayapur. They hand you a certificate and we're going, yeah, all right. It's all right, I'm humbled, not too much. Just bring it on though. You don't know what I did to get this. So you get overly elated. Because as soon as we get materially elated, then we have to get materially, we have to get the consequences of it. Similarly, when something bad happens to us, if we fix our mind upon Krishna, we get something we don't want. If we fix our mind upon Krishna, then we'll be able to tolerate, and then it'll go away. It won't disturb us. Because the material world means sometimes there'll be good things happening to us, and sometimes not so good things, and sometimes bad things will happen to us. Like we're going to have to die, for instance. Not very, for most people, it's not very pleasant. No one sings, as I said before, no one sings the time of your death. Everyone in the crowd around sings, "Happy Death Day to you, happy death." No, it's rather, for most people, it's rather unpleasant, unless we can practice fixing our minds upon Krishna. Either when there's elation, then if our minds are fixed upon Krishna, we'll realize it's just temporary. And when there's problems, we'll realize it's temporary too. And we remain steadily trying to fix our mind upon Krishna, which is the real source of happiness. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.